And moving to Alice Miller's concluding comments of For Your Own Good. It may strike the reader as very strange to see three such dissimilar life histories placed side by side. Christiane F., a drug addict, Adolf Hitler, Hugen Bartsch, a child murderer. But it was because of this very dissimilarity that I selected and juxtaposed these figures. For in spite of their differences, they share certain features common to many other people as well. One, in all three cases, we find extreme destructiveness. Christiane F. directed it against herself, Adolf Hitler, against his real and imagined enemies, and Hugen Bartsch against little boys in whom he was repeatedly murdering himself while at the same time taking the lives of others. Two, I interpret this destructiveness as the discharge of long pent-up childhood hatred and its displacement onto other objects or onto the self. And just a quick comment. It is having the right story that allows us to move beyond hatred to rage to determination to get beyond this sick system is what I've learned. Three, as children, all three were severely mistreated and subjected to humiliation, not only in isolated instances, but on a regular basis. From earliest childhood, they grew up in a climate of cruelty. Four, the healthy, normal reaction to such treatment would be narcissistic rage of extreme intensity. But because of the authoritarian form of child rearing practiced by all three families, this rage had to be sharply suppressed. Five, in their entire childhood and youth, none of the three had an adult to whom they could confide their feelings, especially their feelings of hatred. And she has in parentheses, Christiane is an exception here insofar as she did meet two people during puberty to whom she could talk. Six, all three persons described here felt a strong urge to communicate their suffering to the world, to express themselves in some way. They all showed a special talent for verbal expression. Seven, since the path to safe verbal communication based on a feeling of trust was blocked for them, the only way they were able to communicate with the world was by means of unconscious enactment. Eight, not until the end of the drama is reached do these enactments awaken in the world feelings of shock and horror. The public at large, unfortunately, does not experience such intense feelings upon hearing reports of battered children. Nine, it lies in the nature of these people's repetition compulsion that they succeeded in winning undivided public attention with their enactments, enactments that ultimately led, however, to their own downfall. Similarly, a child who is beaten regularly also succeeds in winning attention, albeit in the baleful form of physical punishment. 10. All three received affection only as their parents' self-objects and property, and my comment transfer the focus of this statement to the primary condition imposed on we the common folk, that is, the requirement that we serve, perform, and you have a concise and accurate understanding of the power guys, the global state, statesman, Plato's tribe, and a clear summing up of the global class system. If we make this minor adjustment, we who do the work receive whatever, whether attention or punishment, from the class system only as the power guy's self-object and property, i.e. only as the expression of power's needs or intentions. Continuing. All three received affection only as their parents' self-objects and property, but never for their own sakes. The longing for affection, coupled with the eruption of destructive feelings from childhood, brought about their fateful enactments during puberty and adolescence. And she comments, she has in parentheses, in Hitler's case, these enactments filled an entire lifetime. These three people, she writes, described here are not only individuals, but also representatives of certain groups. We can better understand these groups, for instance, drug addicts, delinquents, suicides, terrorists, or even a certain type of politician, if we trace the fate of an individual back to the concealed tragedy of his or her childhood. And we're going to be thinking more about that power MO of secrecy as part of their repetition compulsion, because secrecy was so key to their experience of childhood. Everything about their tragedy has been concealed. Continuing with Alice, the many and varied enactments of such people are essentially a crying out for understanding, but in a way that assures them of anything but society sympathy. It's part of the tragic nature of the repetition compulsion that someone who hopes eventually to find a better world than the one he or she experienced as a child, in fact, keeps creating instead the same undesired state of affairs. When a person cannot talk about the cruelty endured as a child because it was experienced so early that it's beyond the reach of memory, then he or she must demonstrate cruelty. Christiane does this by self-destructiveness, the others by seeking out victims. For those who have children, these victims are automatically provided, and the demonstration can take place with impunity and without drawing public attention. But if one is childless, as in Hitler's case, the suppressed hatred may be vented upon millions of human beings, and the victims, as well as the judges, will confront such bestiality without an inkling as to its origins. Several decades have passed since Hitler conceived the idea of destroying human beings like vermin, and in the meantime, the techniques required for such a project have certainly been perfected to the highest degree. Thus, it's all the more crucial for us to keep pace with this development by increasing our understanding of the sources of such intense and insatiable hatred as Hitler's. For, with all due respect for historical, sociological, and economic explanations, the official who turns on the gas to asphyxiate children and the person who conceived this are human beings and were once children themselves. Until the general public becomes aware that countless children are subjected to soul murder every day, and that society as a whole must suffer as a result, we are groping in a dark labyrinth. In spite of all our well-meaning efforts to bring about disarmament among nations. When I was planning the major portion of this book, I had no idea that it would lead me to questions concerning world peace. Originally, my sole concern was to inform parents of what I'd learned about pedagogy in my 20 years of psychoanalytic practice. Because I didn't want to write about my patients, I chose people who were already known to the public. Writing, however, resembles an adventure-filled journey whose destination is unknown at the outset. Therefore, if I've touched on matters of war and peace, it's only peripherally, for these matters far exceed my competence. But my study of Hitler's life, the psychoanalytic attempt to understand his later actions as an outgrowth of the degradation and humiliation he suffered as a child, was not without its consequences. It inevitably brought me to the topic of the search for peace. What emerged has its pessimistic as well as its optimistic implications. I designate as pessimistic the thought that we are far more dependent than our pride would like to admit on individual human beings, and not only on institutions. For a single person can gain control over the masses if he learns to use to his own advantage the system under which they were raised. And I have to comment on this. Let's consider for a moment, in the context of what we've learned by synthesizing and advancing our ancestors' gifts, including, as one of the most critical, Alice herself. Let's consider this in that light. There's no doubt that Alice is right, that in the decades since Hitler conceived the idea of destroying human beings like vermin, the techniques required for such a project have certainly been perfected to the highest degree. Right, no doubt that peace movements are completely inadequate for achieving their stated purpose if they ignore Alice. And right as well to point out that there are individuals who are doing the mischief. But to achieve our clearest picture of the truth of what has been happening to us under class, and we need an accurate understanding, the fullest possible picture, in order to develop our thought process and become advocates for freeing global humanity from the stranglehold of power. We have to see from the vantage of the whole, and this in every sense, geographically, historically, as well as socio-politically. And we have needed all the scholars that are, in a sense, circumnavigating our problem of how to get free of power, though they may use other language and incorporate other themes. We've needed all of them. Karl Popper, Jeremy Bentham, Karl Marx, Diana Spearman, Peter Kropotkin, Alice Miller, John Boswell, Martin Bernal, Alfred O. Hirschman, Miklos Nesley, Terence K. Hopkins, Giovanni Arrighi, Emmanuel Wallerstein, Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, and others as well, like Claudia von Werhoff, and they bringing so many others into our analysis. We've needed to circle around the axis of power and see with many eyes, see through many accumulated years of experience and knowledge to achieve our needed insight that it is absolutely essential for our achieving our freedom to out hidden power, those tiny few who long to be viewed as gods. All to say, Hitler did not happen by accident in a vacuum. He was supported by a global system of power, those 10,000 guys who want to be gods. The very system which we are now about to decommission. And with that, we are at 10, and time to roll on out. And thank you for your patience with my sharing my personal dilemma, though I said we shouldn't be holding each other's hands. Here I am asking you to hold mine. I'm so grateful you're out there. Hold your own hands. Take care of yourselves. Give yourselves a lot of love and stay whole, present, conscious, and fixed on our freedom. I love you very much. And until next week, peace.
Soon is gone and this heart of mine sings. Meditating how sweet.